This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Welcome to the inner city, inner city, inner city.
Good evening, Bahamas, and welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. And it's a wonderful Friday evening. Telephone numbers tonight on Guardian Radio are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. You can text us, powered by BTC, at 422-GR96. I'm your host, Valentino Braun, a.k.a. Scrooge Scroogey. They call me Daddy now. They call me MP. So I'm getting the MP name now. I'm getting called Daddy now. So I have to add those nicknames onto the list of alias I have. They're very respectful. That's made people respect you for what you're doing as an individual. They know where you come from. They know what you're doing individually as to make change in the country. So it's very important, you know, and I'm very happy that a lot of people know they appreciate what I'm trying to accomplish in the country and encouraging others in their neighborhood, in their country, and persons who can assist, like the Life of Key Rotary, the churches, to help build a better country. Okay? Tonight, on Inside Inner City, I have a guest in studio, but I also have an ex-guest coming in too. Similar personality, all who are making a big difference in the country, and sometimes we need to hear that story because we listen to the past. We have the pastors on the show. We have the politicians on the show, but we need to have more coaches and persons who have the tutor young man from thinking about doing harm to a next brother and sister who they might be the same age, but persons like that, we need to highlight them, see that success, some of the problems they encounter, particularly in high school. And before they were even in high school, they were also a part of living on the streets and know about, et cetera, what was happening on the streets, but they did not become a part of it. They took a different course, and maybe we got to keep on telling the story so we can encourage others to, you know, think different, you know, before acting, because when you act, you know, and if you act and you are wrong, you completely lose your life. So in studios today, I have Coach. He's a very good friend of mine. I know him from, he's a teenager. Me and him look the same age, but I'm way older than him. But anyway, I'm going to let him introduce himself. Go ahead.
Good day, everybody. This is Coach Baker, head coach of Seattle Walker basketball team and founder of Island Dreams Basketball Club.
Island Dream?
Yes, sir.
Well, you amaze me, you know. So I asked to want to have you on the show because I wanted to tell you a story. And before we begin, you're still the head coach at Seattle Walker?
That's a good question.
Are you still? But I know you've been doing a fantastic job. We can get a little bit out later on in the show. But tell us, Coach, before you became a coach, I know that you went away to play professionally college. And I was very surprised because you used to play on the park when I was a gangster.
Yeah.
But you were a young guy who came in the neighborhood because you heard about H Street Park and you knew some of the guys who were frequenting the area. And then you came on the park and you became a part of the family. And you excel, and you continued your studies, you continued your work, and then you got a scholarship?
Yes, sir.
So let's tell us where you began before we get into your greatness. So let's hear about how you strive to get where you are.
Okay, My childhood, my early years of basketball, it started with the Wolverines Basketball Club, Shelman LaFleur and Dennis Pratt. That's where I learned the foundation of basketball. And then I transitioned on to CC Junior at the time, which is now TA. I played for Tracy McKenzie, and I went to CC Senior, where I played for Penny Bean. But along the way, you know, I used to play in the community, H Street Court, Common Ground. You know, you have
you to, got tough when you play with
those courts. It's where you get that toughness.
That's like Rucker Park. Rucker Park, they got a Kobe or a Dr. J. Yeah. Everyone got to go there if you want to be successful, be great.
If you want to test your talent level, you want to test your mental, your physical toughness, you had to step on Hayes Creek Park. You had to step on the Common Ground Park. Playing with older guys. You, C-May, Pui, Calvin, you know, some of the guys. Like, if you wanted to test your skills, you really had to go and once you're able to step on the court and gain the respect, then you know your game has arrived. So, moving forward, I ended up going getting a scholarship to Tift County High School in Tifton, Georgia, where I excelled. Then I moved on to prep school, Covenant Christian Ministries in Marietta, Georgia.
Wow.
That's where the Division I scholarships and all those things started to come. And then I transitioned off to college, you know, Seminole State Community College. I did 1 year there, then I transferred. I got hurt in the summer of transfer, and I got hurt at Toma ACL, you know, and that was a rough time for me. It's the first time I've really been injured.
Wow.
You know, coming from the Bahamas, we don't take sports injuries as important, so I didn't know about bones, ligaments. You know, every time you get hurt, it's going to salt water, put some ice on it. You know, rub it down.
I
never knew the severity. Wow. You know, so that's where I learned. That's when I start to fall in love with sports medicine, learning about the body, the bones, how it work, the different that's when basketball became more than just basketball.
Science.
Yes, that's when you understand the strength and conditioning, nutrition, health, and those things. You know, and of course, I was at the top of my career then, you know, 7-8 Division I scholarships.
How much scholarships?
Seven or eight. And of course, like you say, my mom's always preach education.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she always say, someday the ball's going to stop bouncing.
You never know
when you're going to get hurt or whatever. Unfortunately, we don't think about those things. You don't want to think about those things because your dream is to make it to the NBA, and you know, but unfortunately, and not to discourage anybody, those things are part of the game. You understand what I'm saying? But after my injury, I was always a academic first guy. That's my mom's. She's a nurse. She always tried to meet academics. Even though I was exceptionally well on the basketball floor, academics was a thing. And to keep her proud and to keep her happy and to keep her off me, she allowed me to stay out late and practice, and she supported me 100%. All she wanted me to do was keep the grades up and graduate. That's all she wanted. Put on a pretty dress and watch me walk across the stage. So I took care of that.
She put on a pretty dress and walked across the stage. You took notice of that. Yes. So it's a special occasion. She don't like dressing at all. So when you know she put on this dress, she really was proud of you.
Yeah, so that was a joy to see
you
smiled
and told her, all right. That's powerful.
Yeah, so like I said, it was a setback, but I persevered to it. I got back 100%. Mm-hmm. I end up getting a scholarship to a Division II school. Finished my career, had a chance to go pro, but, you know, it just, I wanted to do something else. You know, I was getting older, up in age, so I just, you know, I tried it. I had a couple semi-professional stints. You know, I did it just to say I do it, so I won't have any regrets later on. You know, I tried the pro thing, did it, and then I just came back, and I just, like, all this knowledge, all this game, I'm still young, I still can play. You know, I just say, I'm just come back and I'm off.
And give back.
Give back to my city, my country, like my community. Mm. You know, it's powerful because, like I said, growing up watching you in the areas, like I can remember those Hayes Creek tournaments. Like, as a youngster, we used to look forward to those.
Yeah,
like,
everyone. You know what I'm saying? Everyone. Like, wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's like, you know, and it's like.
It was needed. It brought so many people together, man. Thousands of people used to be on the park, man.
Yeah, and wow. I can remember my very first tournament. Like, I never knew that being a Grandstown community had that much people. You know what I'm saying? You're born and you raised and you live in there, but
I never
seen something that John Park and the feeling, like, I'm just talking about it now and I'm getting goosebumps, because what you did for those community, what you did for the community, and what you did for us as youngsters is, you know, you gave us something to look forward to. And I think that's what we're missing now. Mm. So now that I'm Park and I'm in your position, that's why I see you, I give you the utmost respect.
You're also respectful. Let me just say this. From my knew you from a little kid, I look at your personality and I go, I see that you was going to make it. Because even on the basketball, you was always humble. Guys were hitting hard and you would never say a word. You just went. And I would look at you and say, they couldn't worry about that. Getting ready to come back down. And then you just excelled. You just became better than everybody else. All the rough and toughen up and you keep quiet. And then, you know, so that take you to the world, you know.
Yeah.
That take you to the world. So I must give my thumbs up to you for being a success, you know.
Appreciate that.
You're being a success, man. And many places know they need to understand the importance of staying the course, you know. Always stay the course. Always try your best to stay positive, and then you can become like a baker. Now he is a coach. But I just like to say a thumbs up to you. You did an awesome job. You know? And I was very proud. When I look and I see Jay Filipino in the Freeport News.
Yeah.
Then I see yourself reading the newspaper. Yeah. Then I look at Abel Joseph. Then I look at Chicken. Man, and I look and I say, wow, all these guys, you know, I had some type of a relationship with them. And it was just amazing over the course of the years and see people. Some people, the Colby brothers now playing in the European League. You know, and man, it just amazes me to see you know, the talent and what we can do if we really stay positive and really bring back those programs in the community and really be supportive of persons like yourself who's high school coaches, because people don't know the importance of persons who are being exposed to the type of life and what they can talk, how they can bring it to the high school where we have young men who were similar with that kind of attitude coming into the school, how you can talk to them, because you can't use aggression with aggression. Yeah. You know, we could talk about that a little later, but I just want to say you did a fantastic job, you know, and I was real proud to read the newspaper and see your name. I said, y'all see this guy here? That's Baker. I said, y'all don't even know him. I said, he used to play right in the park here. I said, y'all know Jay Filipino? Y'all see him on the Freeport News? I said, he came right off the park here and played in the basketball tournament and played with us on Sunday. You see, the guy's an anchor now. Yeah. One is a coach now, one playing professionally. I said, these things what you can accomplish.
Donnie Moss.
And Canada, man. That's crazy. It's crazy, man. It's crazy.
A lot of talent, I guess. A lot of talent, man. Like, sometimes, you know, like, you can't save everybody, but you have to do your job, you know what I'm saying? And it's a lot of talent, man, to come out the community.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? And you just, like you say, I just need that inspiration. So I'm putting together my camps, and I want to do free camps, you know, because I know the community really need those things. And I don't worry about the expense, you know.
Yeah. Little word of the advice. I used to think the same way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I used to think the same way. I wanna do this, and I wanna do this free. Yeah, you're gonna do it free, my brother. But take this in mind: you got a family, all right, and you always gotta make sure you get paid. Don't care how much and big your heart is, right? You wanna do it for free, but whenever you talk to your sponsors, you let them know that you know you need a little sniping to keep the program going.
Yeah.
You understand? This is just to make sure that we have proper tennis for the kids. We have proper drinks for the kids. You set up a budget. No, I'm just giving you, I'm not saying I'm giving you any advice, but I learned this the hard, I won't say it's the hard way, but as I grew, when I grew, and I used to do it for free, it put a lot of pressure on me, cost me lose my girlfriend, cost me problems, all type of problems, because I don't have the funds coming in, whatever I hustle, I trying to make the kids happy, the community happy, and I always left myself out.
Yeah.
And that is a burden which set me back for many years. Now I'm just getting back on my feet now. So a little bit of advice. Don't care how much your heart your big is, and you see those kids out there. Right? Always make sure when you talk to your sponsors, if they can assist you on a little small snipe and to keep you going so that you can be positive down the road so you can help these kids. I feel it's not, that's nothing wrong with that.
That's
nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with that, my brother. Listen to me. It could be a burden to you if you just be doing it because you're going to go in your pocket.
Yeah.
You understand?
The legendary Chuck Markey, before he passed, you know, he's a close friend of the family.
Meet.
he coached my uncle at 68 Baker, and one of his last words he told me. He's like, I see you, I hear about you, I know you, I watch you grow up. He say, you know, at the end, what you're doing is great, but you'll always remember you have a family and you have to take care of your family. You understand me? So I get where you're coming from.
He said the same thing to me, you know.
Yes.
I was the first graduate student at C.I. Walker in 1992. Yes, and he was my teacher. And he said the same very thing to us.
Okay.
You know, so you see when they kick in? They kick in when all the pressure hit me one time. And he said, I gave him so much. I listened to me. That's why I'm going to tell you this. I think it was Miss Elaine Pendon, Baumushak. She brought a lot of gifts for the Christmas for everyone in the community. She brought this huge trailer. She had ham, turkey, she had groceries, she had everything. So being the person I am, I said to Miss Pendon, I don't want it by my place, which is the right thing to do. So she said, what if we set up on Debbie Bartlett? She said, what if we set up the trailer on the H Street Park? And I said, that's perfect. And we gave it all the food, Then I had about two pockets of food items that was delivered to me because I said I was going to deliver it to two residents. And then I had, four. I had two for me and two for the rest of the residents. My heart's so big that people came to me after all the grocery went, and they went and they gave out all the ham and turkey and all the grocery. Guess who got here with a bubbling belly? Man, I really go when I catch myself.
Yeah.
Aye, my son said, Daddy, want some juice when I catch myself? Yeah, I ain't got nothing fresh because they give everything. You can't be the fool. I ain't say it's the fool, brother, but take this advice. Mr. Mafia is right, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
As big as your heart is and you want to help the world, always ask for sniping for yourself.
I got you.
You're going to have them kids. Your heart is big. You're going to make sure they have tennis. You're going to make sure they have water. You're going to make sure they have a uniform. That's no if and no doubt about that. No. I know the type of person you are. I can look in your heart. That is not an issue with you. Money is not a desire of your heart.
Yes, sir.
You understand? Money is not a desire of heart. But, like I say, you need a sniping for yourself.
Most definitely.
Yes. Yes. Wonderful. And this is a great, we just say, leader in our country. Baker, you know, like I say, I would always tell the younger guys, these are the guys who came from right around. They say, who's Jay Filipino? I said, that's the guy on Freeport North. You see him now?
You Campbell Champ.
I said, you know where he came from? He come from right on H.P. Park.
Born and raised.
They say, Dustin Baker, they go on and on and on and on and on and on. So, like again, you know, that's just awesome. Y'all are a testimony to the greatness that we have. If you be determined and stay positive.
Yes, sir.
All right. So, Mr. Baker, you know, we talked about how you start off, you travel the world. How was the experience going to all these places coming from the Bahamas?
Man.
You have plenty of gals?
It's wonderful. Listen to me.
I know you're married now. You married?
Listen to me. Listen, I'm not married. I'm a single guy. Listen to me.
What's the experience?
I tell my guys all the time, like, you know what it is to travel all across the world just because you can dribble and shoot a basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my mom's is a nurse. She worked 20-something plus years.
20-something? Still working?
Yes, and she's still working. And I've been to some of the places that she probably would never go. Like, you understand what I'm saying? Like, I've been places that she would never go, and she worked. And the only reason that I was able to go there because I can play basketball. I get to travel the world for free. So, like, man, I just, like I tell you, like, and we're traveling, you get to experience different cultures, different ways of life. You get to see things and it gets to
mindset.
Yeah,
completely changes.
Yeah, it's a wonderful
thing. You want some
thing,
of that.
Man.
You want some of that.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. I've been all through the U.S., I've been Canada, I've been Dominican Republic, I've been Australia, I've been all over to Europe. I've been some places that I never thought like
possible.
You know what I'm saying? So I'm just thankful for my opportunity, thankful for my gift, my talent. You know, the Bible says your talent open up doors for you, and it opened up a lot of doors for me to travel and see different places.
Mm.
So I'm forever thankful for that.
Wow, that's wonderful. And for y'all who are listening, especially young kids, young teenagers, you know, this is the road you need to take. You need to keep your mind open possibly, and you never know where you can end up, you know, and you never know how you can contribute to bringing development back to your brothers and sisters who really need it, You know, you can go there and be a success. You can go to a government school and become whatever you want to be, you know. And that's why I have persons like Mr. Baker come on the show from time to time to tell about their experience and their life, you know, what they're going to become, you know, how the future's going to end up, you know. Their future is not going to be a dead bus. Their future is going to be a success, you know, because many young persons are going to remember them, who they coach in the high schools. And one day, you never know, one might become successful playing football, basketball, or a doctor, or lawyer, and come right back and bless you in the future.
Most definitely.
Know? And that's how it is. That happens all around the world. If you look in the States, many of those athletes, pro athletes who are NBA players, they have guys on the streets who assist them. And when they get to become successful businessmen or NBA players, they go back and they buy the guys a gym, you know, buy him a transportation, give him a check.
So this is
how we make change in the country.
Yes.
Okay, Baker. So you talked about your beginning. Now you said that you want to give back. Why do you want to give back? What you want to give back to?
Because it's somebody gave back to me. Somebody poured into me. It's only right that I pour back into somebody else. Like I said, the late Dennis Pratt. Like, I remember, like, you understand? I remember Saturday mornings, 10 a.m., practicing on UB court. Like, I never had to pay for food. I never had to pay for water. I never had to pay for transportation.
Sound familiar?
I never had to pay for jerseys.
That's why you're going to do the same. That's why you're doing the same thing now. Because like, the same gentleman. What is his name again?
Dennis Pratt.
He's passed away. The late great Dennis Pratt.
And Shelman LaFleur.
That's hospitality. Now he passed it on to you.
Yes.
It's what the children takes in.
Yes.
What makes
those,
them.
Those things. Those Saturday morning practice. Those we used to travel. Wolverines Basketball Club. That's where it started for me. You understand what I'm saying? And once I get established, I know I have my own club, but I'm going to pay homage. I'm going to throw a tournament in his name just to keep his name going, because what he did for me was pivotal in my life.
Wow.
I used to walk the streets. I have friends that's no longer here because they chose the wrong path. You know, some picked up a gun, some in jail for the rest of their life. Like, that could have easily been me, but Wolverines Basketball Club.
That stare you. That was the one positive thing to stare you. Dad and your mom. That stared you.
They kept me. Like, they talked
Coach
to me.
Coach was talking to me. What was he saying to you? What was he saying to you?
He always told me, like, one thing I can say, he always told me both of them, because Dennis Pratt was my mini coach, and Shelman LaFleur was my super mini.
What age
and
were you?
Junior. I was around 9, 10. Yeah.
So he was banning the tree. Yeah. The tree was getting banned.
Yes, it was getting banned.
It was done banning.
Yes.
Okay.
And he always told me from a young age, like, as a coach, as a father, as anybody, as an adult, you know when you see something special in a young kid.
Yes.
Like, he didn't have to tell me be on time for practice. He didn't have to tell me about the importance of being to practice. He didn't have to tell me the importance of going hard. Like, he saw that because I loved the game. My love for the game, it showed. Like, without him having to beat it out of me, it just came out of me. And from the very first moment he laid eyes on me, he told my moms, he's going to be a star.
Did he ever verbal abuse you? Like, that's you was halfway there.
Nah, he never do it. But, you know, every coach got their own.
Right. To get to you. Yes, yes.
I was one of those that he didn't have to do it to me. But if he had to do it, I'm pretty sure he would have done it.
Yes, that's frustrating.
You know,
yes.
And like you say, like, you build that relationship. Like, I have kids now that I coach that I can get on. Mm-hmm. I can grab him and I can say, hey, you're playing like a girl, or I need you to play harder.
Right.
I can get him.
You know his potential. You know what he can do in practice because you watch him in practice.
I know how to get it out of
him.
And then it's that kid that I know that I can't do that to. If I do it to him, he's going to go in the shell and he's going to. So you got to have, it's called mastering multiple personalities.
Wow.
So you have to, that's a big thing, being a coach, being a father, being a guardian, being anybody. You know what I'm saying? Being an adult, being in a position of leadership and instruction.
And power. You're not abusing it.
You understand what I'm saying?
I'm not abusing it.
Everybody's different, so you have to know how to violence, different personalities. Mm. Everybody's not going to answer or respond to the same thing.
Mm. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So you came back to Nassau. How much years did you spend abroad?
Oh, wow, man. I got my first scholarship when I was 15.
15?
So yes, just turning 16. I was, and from the age of 15 up to 28, like, I spent pretty much my whole 20s in the U.S. I was over there at one point from, like, 20 to 28, and I didn't come home not once at a time. Yeah, because my early years, I remember, like, I used to, every break, I used to run home. Come home, come home, come home, come home. And it got to me, and my coach one time, he stopped me, and he's like, hey, listen to me. Why do you keep going home? He's like, what you going home to?
Lonely.
He said, you always say you can't get in the gym, you can't practice, you don't have no weight room to keep up your physical. Why you keep running home and you have all the amenities right here? He said, if your parents want you, they can come over, always come over here and see you.
Wow, it's amazing.
So, like I said, you don't have to beat it at me. When he said it, I just stopped and think about it, and I was like, you know what? Mm-hmm. I just stayed and I worked on my craft, and that's how I was able. And when I saw it, that's when the Division I scholarships and everything started, the accolades started to come. Because the times I spent home just laying around not doing anything or working halfway, I was over there going to the gym 2-3 times. I had access to the gym. I had shooting machines. And I want to say, like, that's the difference between the U.S. and America. You know what I'm saying? Like, they have things in place.
You mean the U.S. and the Bahamas?
Yeah, they have things in place. The difference between a high school kid over here and a high school kid over there is resources. If I could get in the gym, rain, snow, sleet, hail, hurricane, whatever, if I can get in the gym and work and live and do these things,
the best equipment,
I'm going to be better than you. When it rains, I can't practice because the court wet. If it's 103 out there, can't go there because you're going to get a heat stroke.
And headache.
You know what I'm saying?
And get dreamed.
You understand what I'm saying?
So this guy could practice for 5-6 hours nonstop.
Nonstop. Whenever he could get in at 3 o'clock in the morning.
And he get Gatorade.
and he got a shooting gun that, you know what I'm saying, he can stand in one spot and the gun shoot the ball back.
And the ball keep on coming back.
Shoot
one spot all day.
Shoot 1,000.
So I stay scoring the ball all day.
So it's a difference. Like, you know what I'm saying? And, we need to take sports serious in this country because... For anybody who's listening, and the powers that be, do you know the top engineer professor at Florida State University don't make half as much as the head football coach or the head basketball coach? The highest paid person on the top engineer, I don't care, civil engineer, marine engineer, he does not make half as much as the top football or the basketball coach, because sports generates more revenue into the school. Do you know what they make for one of those bowl games, NCAA tournament game?
Yeah.
Do you know the amount of
Sugar
money?
Bowl and what
all those bowls. Do you know the amount of money they generate? We behind because we don't take it serious. Every high school, every school is supposed to have a gymnasium. That's how you generate money into the school.
Yes, yes, yes. Because I get new, because just say, okay, we have D.W. Davis, right? Okay, he was the head coach. Okay, we have Hugh Campbell. So we're switching Hugh Campbell around in all the schools that have gym and AC. And we're inviting the media, we're inviting the parents to pay a little $5, $10 to come in, $10 to come
in
the gym.
Come.
And then you're going to invite fans to come in the gym. So you're going to have people from H.O. Nash coming. You're going to have people from Aaron Bailey coming. Then you're going to have their family coming in. So we're going to have a packed gym because each one of these kids come from a different community. And now...
You're going to have a packed gym.
Yes.
And it causes... Now it causes every coach to get on their craft and put in the work to build a solid team. Because you have no excuse. You're everywhere on the gym. You have
makes
people
sense.
Playing field. So everybody have the opportunity to teach a kid... prepare your kids and That's why you see better games
yes.
in America than here.
Yes.
You're
correct.
And you have more money. Now you have money to pay people to put people in positions. Now you don't have one coach trying to coach four sports just to get the money because he's being underpaid.
Yes.
And now it's no real work being put into the kids because it's only 24 hours in a day. It's only so much time one man got.
Yes.
He has a family. He has kids. He's a wife.
He has to spend time with his kids. Yes.
How much time are you going to spend playing around with sports and other people's kids?
So he'd be preoccupied. Take some of the resources. Put more. His family, you can't blame him.
Yeah,
you can't blame him because he's dealing with at-risk kids and he's dealing with kids.
You understand what I'm saying? So
he's, yeah. It puts him at a disadvantage.
Yeah, now,
anyone, yes.
And now you have, like you say, each sport, you have a coach design. If you was a baseball dude, you coach baseball. If you was a volleyball dude, you coach volleyball. If you was a basketball, if you was a trap, and you have a coach for each sport, you could up the pay for each sport because now you got one coach doing one sport that he loved, and now you have a competitive, when basketball season come around, competitive basketball.
And
when
volleyball come union. Around,
you have a competitive volleyball season. When you have baseball come around, union. You understand what I'm saying?
For retirement for the players and compensation if you get injured, so you start a union.
Because guess what? I'm going to leave this with you. I coach Tiff County High School. Okay?
Hold on. You coach?
I was a coach also
in the States?
Yeah, I used to coach 8th grade, but I was like a grad assistant. Student assistant on the varsity team.
Mm-hmm. I heard about the varsity team.
Yeah, that's the high school team. Uh-huh. They was ranking the state.
They was ranked?
They was ranking the nation in the whole United States.
Wow.
They had the number one, they had the best player in the whole state of Georgia, which is Mr. Basketball, 2 years in a row.
Mr. Basketball? What's his name?
His name is Brandon Green. He played at the University of Kansas with Andrew Wiggins and Joel Embiid.
Joel Embiid, who played for 76ers.
Yes, and Andrew Wiggins, who played with the Warriors, right? He was that good. He was 6'8", shooting. He was a 6'8", guard. Okay. We had Tadrick Jackson, 6'3", junior point guard. Both was on the same team. Mm-hmm. Tadrick ended up going to Georgia Tech. I'm going to say this to say the importance of sports, right? When they made their schedule and they put their schedule out, everybody can see their games. A week before, like, they played Pebblebrook. They had Pebblebrook on, I'll never forget it. They had Pebblebrook on the schedule. Pebblebrook had Colin Sexton, the guard for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah, I heard his name. Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, Brandon Green, Tadrick Jackson going against Colin Sexton. Atlanta, Colin Sexton's from Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
Tip County's in southwest Georgia. That's more like the country head towards
so
Florida.
So they're bringing everybody.
So it's a city, but it's a country.
Yes.
Mr. Basketball and the big thing in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
Did you know the normal price for the games would be like $7 on a regular night? This game, they upped the price. $15 entrance fee. Mind you, the gym can hold 2,500 people. That's a high school gym. 2,500 gym. They upped the price. Did you know, within 20 minutes of them releasing that schedule, tickets for that game was sold out. Sold out like a month ahead. So you can't even, there's no way you could get in the game. If you don't have your tickets, you can't get in. Right?
So they had to put a screen on Zyde.
They have a fire marshal at the gym. At fire marshal.
So make sure.
The gym got 2,500 people in there.
Uh-huh.
And got another 3,000-4,000 outside. Side. Just wanting to get in the game. Wanting to see the kids. At $15.
Wow.
That ain't concessions and that ain't nothing. You understand what I'm saying? They playing three games. All the games be sold out at $7. They playing three games a week.
Mm-hmm.
You do the math. For 2,500 people, $7, three nights a week, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is not concession. How much money that is? Sports is the biggest
generator
when it comes to revenue.
And it makes sense, and we could do the same thing over here.
Yes.
I look at it. I look at these parks. Honestly speaking, me and Nate were saying the other day, and we always had this thought now, we always looked at the parks, and we said, these parks that we have, some of them could put roof on them. I say they can be air conditioned. I look at some of these spots like Mason Edition, H Street Park.
Yeah.
I say they could be a dome, I say they're a dome with an exercise section, and we could start to basketball tournaments. We even start a basketball league for 3 months on this park and have different individuals from different areas come on. We have a dorm, and then we can start to create our revenue. You know, most players might not make it to the NBA or to the European League, but we can start our own league if we do these things in our own particular community. And this is what brings people closer together. This brings the crowd out. So all these things is things that we can do to make things better. And actually, we already tried it, you know. Those basketball tournaments was a test first for us, and you talked about all the people came there. So you can't say it can't work.
I listen to me. I'm listening to me. I'm gonna hint on that right now.
Go ahead.
Listen to me. Hay Street. Let's not get it twisted. Being in Grantstown, the separation from Hay Street and where I live is Blue Hood Road.
Right.
We all know about the war and the
The gang war.
You wanna understand what I'm saying? One of the reasons why I was able to come over play basketball and not get in trouble is because what?
A truce of squad.
You understand? A truce of squad. Yeah, because I could play, and everybody know that I can play Easter basketball.
Yes.
I was able.
Yes.
My other friends that I talked about earlier, they couldn't come over there.
No, they couldn't come over there.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
And my friends that I had on your side, they couldn't come over there.
No, no.
Only the Donathan Moss and the ones that are able and the one that can play ball.
Yes, you're right.
You understand what I'm saying? So that lets you know right there, basketball is a common ground. It's a mediator.
Yes.
We can use sports to mediate some of this violence.
Mm.
We can really use it, and our leaders and all of those, they need to come in these communities, and they need to talk with the community leaders, and they really need to do an initiative, and they need to stick with it. And when an initiative is brought to the table, whether it's under this government or the next government, if it's a good initiative, it needs to continue. We need to get away from.
And again, power. I stopped
because,
the program.
Because I didn't start it. And, and it's hurting the kids, man.
Yeah,
like,
it's hurting the country and the kids.
Yes,
it's a reflection of the kids. It's hurting the kids because these are who are getting hurt.
Yeah.
You know?
Because most of these kids, look forward to these things.
We know them, man. Listen,
you know what I'm saying?
It's crazy.
And we need to get away from that, man.
Yeah,
like, we say year after year, election after election, we say, you know, we gotta target the inner cities, and we're gonna do this, and it's like, come on, man. We need to really. It's time for action now.
Yeah.
Let's talk more action.
By you saying that, you know, most persons who are listening to the show would say, "I am anti-government. I am anti-minister. I'm anti-Brave too. I'm anti-Perry Christie." It ain't that I'm anti, you know. It's just that I feel the same way you feel that we can do and make a better difference if we were to be continuous.
Yeah.
If we was to take the politics order and say that, hey, once we start this program, we're going to continue this program no matter what, because this has been a successful program.
Yeah.
So we would be able to organize and keep destruction in place.
Yeah.
And we'd incorporate more kids and more people so that make sure that they become productive. But when we were starting and stopping, it can't work. And that's one of the reasons I always say, you know, about the Urban Design Lab, which is the Overland Initiative. I always said to myself that the Honorable Prime Minister stated about a week ago that the reason they can fulfill all the election promises is because they had to divert their attention to the fact that they had natural disasters. He's talking about Hurricane Dorian. He's talking about the hurricane we had before that. He's talking about the COVID-19. And while they are good excuses, at the same time, it's supposed to be a partnership. See, partnershiping would take the pressure off you, Mr. Prime Minister, because you wouldn't have to focus on the Overland Initiative, because you get partners. You have persons who are part of it, and they would have been assisting the government. So why is you focusing probably on the damage done on Abaco? The partners that you have in these particular communities could be in helping you with the feeding program. They could be to help you assist with the less fortunate persons in the community. They could help with the cleanup program. They could help with the development of the program because it'll be a joint effort.
Yeah.
So that's why I come down hard on the Prime Minister, because, see, brother, I was there from the inception. So I know when things could be better.
Yeah.
You know, the excuse, what you're saying, yes, I can understand you are natural disasters, but at the same time, it's supposed to be a partnership agreement. And this is what you're referring to when you said it got to be continuous.
Yeah.
So for the leader of the country to say that, it comes down to this. When you are elected leader, right, you got to forget about being the leader of that particular party. You understand what I'm saying? So when, in other words, Mr. Baker, this is what I'm saying. You campaign, you're trying to win the government, okay, you're the opposition, okay?
Yeah.
Now, if you're successful in winning the government, right, You are no longer the leader of that party. You are now the leader of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. Your job is not to victimize nobody on the FNM side. That's it. The PMP coming power now. Their job is not to go victimize no one on the FNM side, you know.
That's how it should be.
Yes. They're supposed to get rid of that, find out good programs that the FNM probably inherit from the PLP. At the same time, support many of those programs to be continuous so that we can have a better country, bring down the crime rate, bring down the poverty rate, poverty rate, and et cetera. Then, I'd say this to you. You focus your attention on developing the country. So your first 1 year in government, you know there's a housing problem. Okay? You know there's a problem with leadership, community leaders. Let's say we start our housing progress program, right? We got leaders from all over the community. Some of them know who people registered in their community and they need homes. We might could suggest that we get some of these names, and when we build in some of these subdivisions, we might could reroute some of these people over to Mr. Baker community in Bantan to Mr. Brown people in the Grandstand area to show that you're making an impact on the country's progress when it comes to affordable homes. Uh-huh. See, these things are very important because if you're doing affordable homes and you're making them only affordable for a certain amount of people, then that's a problem because me and you see the everyday struggles about people living in the community. So all I'm saying is this. Partnership is very important. So the government's supposed to partnership with community leaders in the country. The producer's telling me you got to take a little break. So we'll be right back, Mr. Baker, on Guiding Radio. And I'm your host, Valentino Brown. Don't go nowhere. Be right back after the break.
Ain't no love in the heart of time. Ain't no love, and it's sure not for today. Ain't no love, cause you ain't around. When you were mine, you love lit up this whole neighborhood. But now that you're gone, you know the sun don't shine from the city hall to the county line. And that's why I said ain't no love in the heart of the city. Ain't no love in the heart of town. Ain't no love, it sure is a pity. Ain't no love.
Preparing for a hurricane can make all the difference in safeguarding the lives of family, friends, and neighbors. By knowing what action you should take, you can reduce the effects of a hurricane disaster. Get all the facts of the potential of having insurance, impact-resistant windows, home emergency power, essential supplies, and a lot more before the storm. After the storm, where to purchase building or cleaning supplies, waste disposal, medical care, and more. The Nassau Guardians Hurricane Guide will help you make sure everyone knows what to do in the event a hurricane approaches. Take advantage of this double insertion opportunity plus 15 commercials on Star 106 Hits. Contact us today at 302-2300. That's 302-2300 or your account executive. Will you be prepared?
Girl, Junior just showed me Bulla Boy in his phone.
What you mean? He take picture of that good for nothing boy?
Shh, you don't want Bulla hair. You say that. You know she always say that's my good child.
So what he doing in Junior phone?
Oh, he there because the police looking for him. He on that wanted list.
Wanted persons in your phone now?
Yes, child. And when police won't find anybody quick, after something happened, they can send picture direct to your phone. Go to Google Play or App Store and search for Crack Crime Bahamas, then pick install and it will go straight to your phone.
There is also a section on missing persons.
Yes, girl. Everybody needs to get this app so police can tell us right away when these people go missing. Just like an alert system.
Yes, it has numbers for Crime Stoppers Bahamas so you can call and nobody knows you. Call directly to Miami and give the information without giving your name or anything about you. I tried the other day, and when I hear Junior and his boys talking about where they hide those guns, I walk quick round the corner and call that number.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Welcome to the inner city, inner city, inner city.
We're back on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. You can text message us today on Guardian Radio at 422-GR96. Our producer is one out of Nrolli. He's one of the best producers, you know, on Guardian Radio. And in fact, we have a lot of great producers, but he has been here from inception. From my God, yeah, you know, he had given me some training And from time to time, he tells me, say, man, keep up the good work. So I got to show my gratitude of letting you know that he is the producer on tonight. And to Guardian Radio for having me on the whole so that I can make presentations of persons like Mr. Baker here in studio. And to, you know, we had Jamal Roll, our artist, one of our great artists on a few weeks ago. And that story is similar. You know, and we're looking at the problem that we're facing in the country today about kids killing kids in the government school. We will get to that in about 10 minutes. I just want to make sure before we get to that topic, we're going to start at 7:30 to make sure we have 30 minutes to hit that topic. So we're going to be in a time with Mr. Baker, because you're a high school coach, and I want to hear your view on some of the altercation that you interfered with in school and what you think is the problem. And then we're going to talk about what we can do to see how we can cease the problem in the country if the authorities are listening. Okay, so 7:20 now, we got 10 more minutes. And I was saying about the Overhead Initiative. I feel deeply in my heart the combination skill set of the persons who were involved in the Urban Design Lab, which switched it over the initiative. I'm talking about Nicole Virgil Roll. She was the director. Carmi Jones. He was one of the senior officers. Samantha Roll. Now, Samita Ferguson now is one of the persons now in charge of the Overhead Initiative. But the first that I called were part of the program. We had students from the University of the Bahamas. We had students from the University of Vienna, Austria, who were paid by the Bahamas government out of the Office of the Prime Minister, IDB Bank, the National Art Gallery, Dougaligam Studios. What's his name? I got him, who assisted me real, real good. I got his name in my head. I can't remember him, but I got him, his name. And we were able to come up with a concrete plan for the country when it deals with crime, poverty, housing, economy, and how to empower the country. I feel that if this prime minister had all the tools, he had all the tools, he had all the resources at his disposal. And like he said, his attention got diverted. So to say that the attention got diverted when you have the tools, I feel that the Overhead Initiative, if it was done correctly, we would have seen a vast improvement in the communities that we reside in. We see a vast improvement in this country. As it is now, it's too slow. It could have been 10 times faster because there's a blueprint done by the Urban Design Lab, and they're still following with it. But if you had followed that manual, we would have been in a way better position. The Prime Minister talked about the empowerment zone. He talked about low-cost and homes. He talked about diverting the port, developing the ports. All that was a part of it, but most importantly, it was dealing with crime and how we can eradicate crime. And I would say to me, it's been too slow, and that's why I'm upset about it. I felt that if he was to actually empower those who were partnershiping with the Overhead Initiative, persons who were there from the inception, who had the ideas and who were part of it, we would get further in the country. But true persons of this problem is me. And I do this and I do that, and not a team effort. Everything gets stagnated and no progress is made. So that's why everything now is actually on the go slow. Go ahead, Mr. Baker. I know you're anxious to say something. You said you want to say something, what I referred to earlier.
Since I came back, and I'm in my early 30s, so most people consider me young.
Yes, you are young.
Right? What I've noticed about the Bahamas.
Talking to Mike Littlewood.
Oh, sorry about that. I'm sorry. I say, since I've came back and, you know, I'm in my early 30s, so most people consider me young. And a thing that I noticed with our country, and I'm making a comparison between Bahamas and when I was in the U.S. In the U.S., they thrive on giving young people opportunities. When I was in the U.S.
So you mean if I have a great idea and it's something that makes sense, they would support me and they endorse, yes, because it makes sense.
They thrive on giving young. I've never been, even being a foreigner, I was never
victimized
of an opportunity because of my age. If I brought something to the table and it was working and people came along and they ran with it. Here in the Bahamas, we have this thing where.
Talking to Mike, I want to hear this.
Say, here in the Bahamas, we have this thing where they don't like to give young people opportunities. It's this thing where you have to wait your turn. What is my turn? You understand what I'm saying? And it's like, while I'm young, while I'm energetic, while I'm innovative, while I'm vibrant, mm-hmm. that's when you're supposed to put me to work. That's when you're supposed to use me. That's when, you understand? Don't wait till I'm up in age where I don't have that same fire, that same drive, that same energy. Like right now, I'm going back to the basketball aspect. I can get on the court and I can actually show my kids the move that they see Steph Curry doing. The move that they're trying to do, I can teach them. I can physically get there and show them. So when they see me do
step
it,
step back.
You understand right what I'm saying? When they see me do it, they stop.
Wow.
And they look. And they believe what I'm saying because they can actually see me do it. I can
see
break
it. Believe it.
You understand what I'm saying? Instead of, it's different when you have a coach that's 50 and he telling you, do a step back, but he can't teach you how to do it.
Mm.
You understand what I'm saying?
So you witnessed it, you experienced it. So you saying, bring it to the table.
And it all goes back to the thing we have and the thing with leadership in the Bahamas and the reason why they don't give us young people the opportunities because nobody likes to relinquish power.
Hmm.
With power, you got control. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
With power, you have control, and people don't like to relinquish control. And that's what we have in this country, and that's why we have the problems we have.
Mm.
Because it's not necessarily that they don't, like, you know.
That's
like,
the truth.
Like, they just don't like the perks and everything that comes with the power. When I use the power, I can undermine people. I can close doors on people. I can, you understand?
But you're closing the door. You're closing the door that could actually benefit the country and get it to go the right way.
We've seen this for years.
And that's what's going on. That's why the country's, that's why I'm talking now, how the country's moving so slow with the urban design.
People will kill.
Over the initiative.
People will kill generations and generations of young behemoth kids for the sake of power and control.
And that's why, again, to the Prime Minister of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, when the IDB Bank, where they sit down to and I explain to them what I'm doing in the grandstand area. They say, you're doing something like local government. You have a team of people. So you have just like a local government, because when I told them what I was doing, I say, I have pastors working with me. I say, I'm developing a plan for my community on how to get the tourists to come over the hill in the city community. They ask me, how I control the community? I say, use my influence as a community leader by doing positive stuff and helping people. And that has brought me a sense of position in the community. I don't abuse my power. I don't take advantage of nobody.
And that's, and the key word you said in that is control. Eliminate that word, because we're not controlling anybody. You
that's
never
right.
controlled me.
That's right.
You never, you
that's
know what's right. controlled? You know what's that's the definition
right.
of control?
That's like a,
you
right.
never, you stop trying to control
right.
people.
That's right.
Give people opportunities.
Yes. Yes.
Stop victimizing
yes.
people and give people opportunities.
Yes.
The wrong word is being used. You're
yes.
trying to control people.
Yes.
Whenever you're trying to control someone and you're doing it the wrong way, you're going to have rebellion.
Yes.
People are going to rebel against
yes.
you.
Yes. It's not about control. It's
not about
by
control.
It's
exactly.
Leading,
and that's
leadership.
They have the wrong concept.
And oppression. That's why I never campaign for a political party to use the little power I get. Not yeah. power. Not power. Power to assist.
He want and
they yeah. want people to use the power for
yeah.
to go to
yeah,
residents and say vote
games.
For them.
That's all.
You're breaking down the country.
That's all. Yeah.
So let me go right back to this real quick. Right? I feel that once you're elected, just say in the upcoming general election, if the Honorable Hubert Alexander Minnis was to repeat again, that is gonna be a miracle. I don't saying it's not going to happen, but it would be a miracle to everyone. I'm surprised, but it never will happen in this election, right?
I tell people, I say, hey, you got to sit and wait. The Bahamian people are the Bahamian people. You know how we go.
Yes.
When we ain't on your run, we not on your run. We for you. We yeah. ain't wrestling with you. We ain't messing with you. So, hey, when the time comes, you see how it goes.
Right? And he is elected again. And he said that he would focus more on the programs that was needed to focus on. He said he'd focus more on the poor people. Go ahead, Mr.
Stop.
Baker.
I want to stop you now. Why every time something goes wrong, why the inner city, the poor communities, always the first people to get cut?
Good question. I don't have an answer for that. You got an answer for it?
Why would everything? I don't have an answer.
I can't answer it. I've been living in I don't have an answer. I think that's a combination of different answers.
Yeah, and I say we because right. I still live in
because I can't answer it.
Why is us? Why and that's what people got to understand. Like especially the inner city people, right? And I use inner city because I'm being politically correct right now. But you know what
we take away the ghetto. We in the city now.
Yeah. Right. Why, when something happens, we are always the first people to get cut?
You said it. Because we are not important to them.
You understand what I'm saying?
We are not important to them.
I'm throwing the question out. You know how I'm doing. It to you.
Yes.
So it just makes your mind wonder.
Yes.
Why do we always have to wait that things going good to get something? And why when things going bad, we're the first one to get sliced?
Wow. That's crazy. I guess we had a guinea pig in the middle on.
Is that acceptable?
It's not
is
acceptable.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You know, I'm just I'm just saying.
And that's why I'm really upset too, because the prime minister had everything at his disposal. He had local government on the table. Where I was a part of that too. And these are all recommendations from the IDB Bank. You know, these are suggestions that I was given to the IDB Bank, me and Hugo George, when we were meeting there to the IDB Bank because they wanted to find out of what's going on in the community. And then how I changed around my life, I was recommended to them because of the work I was doing in the country. So I had a private sit down with executives from all around the world, from Latin America. And I was telling them about the housing, why teenage pregnancy, you know, one bedroom homes. So I said to them that if we could find these old abandoned homes in the community and probably purchase them and turn them into low cost homes with two or three bedroom and increase the knowledge and education of those residents in the community, we'd see a downfall of babies born in teenage pregnancy. We'd see reduction in crime. So I was there giving them advice, and they wrote down all these things. So a lot of stuff you see going on now when it comes to the development of the country, they came from small man like us. And I sit down at the table with the representative from the IDB Bank, and I was giving them ideas, and then we were brainstorming. And that's how the students from Vienna got you, because now they help and recommend the students from Vienna with the advice of the Office of the Prime Minister in 2012, 2013. And all of this was a design plan for us to get persons like yourself, find you guys, and support you guys wherever you are once you're doing a positive job. You understand?
I got you.
So that's why I'm so disappointed with the Prime Minister, and he's saying now that because he had to decide on the country and in its natural disaster or the vehement public, which he left many people in dire positions across the country. Some people committing suicide. Some people got put in their home. Some people sleeping in the car. Husband and wife separated. We have more persons going before the court for COVID-19 violation. And we have people stealing people's car battery in broad daylight, 9 o'clock in the morning. We have people stealing people's heart. We have people's air condition.
Listen.
Crazy?
You got to do it in the day because you got curfew at night.
Baker, it's crazy.
It is.
Baker, it's crazy. I said, I'm teeth the hood. Right on the camera. The guy pulled up and got people jet ski.
Yeah, I saw that. It's crazy. But guess what? That ain't rich people problems. That's me and your problems. Those things, like, you understand what I'm saying? Who fears and knows it? When you can't relate to it, you don't see it as a problem. Me and you can relate to it, and we know the issues and why these things happening. So, you understand what I'm saying?
More car battery getting stealed now, more than ever. I said, these guys selling car battery for $50 right now. You know, some people spend $150 for car battery right now. You can imagine right now, this time right now, that you look on your camera and you see, now, you're not a wilding person, you know. No. But things tough. You just got this $150, $200 to go pay your rent. When you look now, this guy down there stealing your car battery, what you could think you could do to him?
Yeah.
Huh?
Hey.
That's how serious it is right now in this country. That's why we should give credit to places like the Rotary and Life of Key Foundation. These same rich people, them they be doing their part, but I think on our end, we stink on our end when it comes to helping out our brothers and sisters in this country. I tired of this foolishness, Chan, but always the rich people and this foolishness. I know the rich people would support you because you're generous.
Yeah.
They have been assisting many places in this country for many years, many political parties, and they wanted them to help us. But it never reached us.
Yeah,
you understand what I'm saying, Baker?
No, when I say rich people,
I'm not talking about you. I'm not referring to none what you're saying. Yeah, no. I'm not talking to you saying. What you're saying made sense there. Yeah. You know, it's not their problem.
No,
they began getting communities.
Yeah,
and they don't have the set of.
They don't
have
to see those things.
They helping their community.
They don't know some of these things. They don't know exist. In
that's
country.
Right.
These things are happening.
That's why I take my time and I go to them. I explained to them, and they can't believe it. Yeah. So I sit down with them. That's how come they start to assist more in the country. You see? That's what's happening now.
These things really happen.
They're concerned about the country.
I'm going to tell you. I'm going to give you a little example of how bad things are.
How bad things is?
You know, the government pump is in the front of our house.
Right? Yeah, on the vestry.
Yeah. I didn't even want to say the name.
All right, sorry.
But it's so bad that the folks take the handle off the pump.
Uh-huh.
You know that?
Yeah,
you
the thing
squeeze it up, the silver piece.
Yeah, so now they're pushing out all the water's coming on now.
They take it off, unscrew it, and keep it for them so no one else can get it.
That's how selfish people become in now. You see what poverty is too? You see, now listen to this.
I watch every morning on the camera.
And they bring it back in the car.
Unscrew it on, get the water, unscrew it, leave.
So no one else can get no water.
It's crazy.
You see what this poverty is too? See?
I see it.
That's why I want people to understand, for if Menace, the Honorable Hubert Alexander Menace, the leader of the Free National Movement, is to repeat as Prime Minister of the country, I hope he see what has been done under his reign as leader of the country and leader of the free world Bahamas, okay? All the suffering, all the car batteries and people going house, people going Chinese, stealing their corned beef and white rice. We even seeing people who work in the bank. The people who tear so rough, the people in the bank who dealing with the bank finances, stealing from the people. This crazy, it's crazy in the Bahamas.
Desperate times.
So, Baker, let's get to the important part of this show because, you know, we recently had a death and an attempted murder at one of our public schools. Notice these kind of things don't happen in the private school. Do they? Think about it. Why do you think you talk about the rich and then you talk about the private school, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you don't hardly have these incidents like fatal stabbing or fatal shooting in the private school. Why do you think it's that? Down in the junior school? Or it's because the community where the kids resides in?
I wouldn't say the community. I wouldn't say necessarily all about the community.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mixture. It stands like when it comes to kids, I'm a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to kids, like my kid, he's in the fifth grade.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I teach in the primary school. I teach 1-3, but I have to cross everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I invigilate exams. Fifth grade students, sixth grade, whatever they ask me to do, I do. And I think the difference is in my kid and a kid from a public school. I'm not saying all public schools, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
But when you're talking, you gotta categorize.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? If the numbers show that in private they do better, in the government they do less. Not saying all, but when you speak, you gotta speak in.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying?
To make it balanced.
So, when my child come home, he has a mom, he has a dad is a teacher, mom's a teacher. I know for a fact his mom
It's going to be up on him.
She going to sit down, look who's
with ABC, door, 1, 2, 3.
Test him over.
2 plus 2.
Whereas, and like I say, it's not every child in the public school is like that. But you have some good public school students that excelled, right? But the number shows that in private school they get more better numbers, right? So for the majority in the public school that's failing, let's look about it. When they come home, what's going to happen? They put that bag down, change their clothes, go outside, play. They never open that book again.
And they're seeing all kind of stuff.
And then...
What is
it? And then...
Same crazy.
My son, he has 2 career professional parents.
Mm-hmm.
Both parents got bachelor's degrees, working on their masters. You know what I'm saying?
You working on your masters?
As well, yes, sir.
Well, awesome.
So mom's about to finish her masters real soon. We understand the importance of education and, you know, Chroma to make sure. So we're going to take that time.
You're going to take that time to make sure you get it.
You know what I'm saying? And then we work.
He's not going to walk out the house and go there.
You know,
after he
comes
from
school.
He got homework, so we're going to deal with this.
And then
yeah.
We work, you know. Teachers, our schedule the same as his.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we might do stuff after school, but
yeah.
If she busy, he can come to me. Then if he come to me, his grandmother is a nurse, another career professional.
Wow.
So he has, you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Whereas...
The family is functional. It's a functional family.
You see what I'm saying?
Not a dysfunctional family.
Exactly. Whereas the Tay-Tay, mommy might, when he get up from school, mommy might be going to work.
But the grandma coming for him.
You see what I'm saying? And ain't nobody there. Only uncle or somebody, big brother, big sister. They ain't putting no pressure on him to do the work. You understand? He probably never open that book again.
Yeah.
You understand? She don't have to. She barely making ends meet. You understand what I'm saying? Priorities in the wrong place. You know, daddy might not be there.
Yeah.
And you don't have to see him.
Yeah.
Foundation that I have.
Right.
So I see it all the time. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm in the government. I don't want to talk down on us. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Because I really love my kids, bro.
Yeah.
I really love my kids. And, you know, I'm not judgmental. But I see some of the things on why these kids fail in the public. They don't have their parental support. A teacher when he could do so much.
Yes.
A teacher with you from 8 to 3.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? It's when you go home, it's your parents.
Your mind completely changes when you go home because it's a different environment.
If your parents and the kids in the government school that succeed, that excel, exactly what I explained to you about my kids, that's what they do to their kids. They got, in the public school, the kids that you see, the parents are active and involved, they're the kids that excel.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
The kids that you don't see their parents, they're the ones that don't accept.
Now, I just like to say this. Everything I do in this life reflects on my past life. My mom and dad was never there for me, right? My mom was on crack cocaine, right? My father was in prison for murder. So I never know what a mother figure is or a father figure is. Now, I'm good with my father now. My mom's deceased now.
Okay.
But me and my father's all right. All right? Because I understand the situation. You know, he made some bad choices.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I think he would have taken care of me if he was, you know, out of prison. But that didn't happen.
Circumstances.
So I was a little resentful of him. But then I understand the situation as I get older. So I forgave him for that. And we talk occasionally, you know. And my grandmother. She was a woman who had principle. She teach me about not stealing. She teach me about not liking people things. She teach me about manners. If I pass someone older than me, then when I'm passing, if I don't, I get slapped.
Yeah.
Or my ass get ringed.
Shout out to all the Grammys.
Right.
Shout out to the Grammys.
Right.
The Grammys, the Grammys are special.
When we pass in the church, she would always say, show reverence to God. If you have anything in your hand that is illegal, you take it, you put it in your pocket, even though you're not seeing God. That's the presence of God.
Yeah.
So be
respectful.
Right. And she told me never let no one take advantage of me. Now, she was a tough woman.
All Grammys.
Yeah, you know.
All Grammys.
So, in essence, I didn't have the mother and father figure in my life, but I had a grandmother. I had my aunt and uncle. I think they're my mother also. And my daddy, I think my uncle Barry Brennan, he's a former police officer. And my auntie Lillian Brennan, she is an immigration officer. I think between them three,
They took on responsibility of my mother and father role. They always was there for me. If I needed a tennis or I needed clothes, even when I got myself in problem, I would normally see my uncle, who was a corporal. I was just a constable, but he never wanted to raise up in the rank, and he had been a constable for close to 40 years. Mm-hmm. And I would normally see him in the station when I got locked up for serious crime or any petty offenses. He never looked down on me. Now, he never talked to me. He was disappointed in me, but he never talked to me why I was locked up, why me and him was in the station. I never mentioned he was my uncle because I was ashamed.
Yeah.
I could have never said uncle. You know, when I was so shocked, like when I walk in the station and I hassled him with his fellow officers, I would stop. And that's the way they'd get a jump on me. Because I see my uncle.
Yeah.
And when I see my uncle, they think like I fall up now because I reach in the station, but I only stop being aggressive because I see my uncle. So I get one or two blow, and then I would calm down because I was very ashamed of myself because he was there for me, you know. Besides me going out there and decide to make the wrong choices. So between my auntie and my uncle and my grandmother, they were my mom and my father. And that affected me. You know, so what you're saying is true, you know. All that plays an important role, you know, and the community. So I just want to talk real quick about the kid that who got stabbed and lost his life. I want to send my condolences to his mom.
Most definitely.
His classmates, his, you know, et cetera. I want to also say I hope a speedy recovery for the one who also was fighting for his life.
It was two.
Yeah, it was two. One also got stabbed.
From the same person?
Yeah, there was two friends, and they got stabbed from two other guys.
Oh, it's two.
It was two on two. Yeah. Two were talking in the hallway, and two came to an argument start, and they stabbed the next two young men.
Oh, wow.
And I heard that the next young man who got stabbed, that he was not involved in the gang. See, you don't have to be involved in the gang. It's just that the guy is a bully.
Yeah.
You know, I was a bully in school, so I can tell you this thing. You don't have to be in no gang. I was a bully. So anyone to me who look at me wrong, step on my shoes, that's how ignorant we were.
Yeah.
And whatever we come out, that's how we was thinking. And we have to change the mindset. So, yes. And I just like to send my condolences. You know, it's very sad.
Most definitely.
And I use this opportunity for Guardian Radio. Because I was a gang leader. I've seen friends die. I've seen friends killed, being involved in murders that happened in the community. Or we heard about what happened in the community over the course of the years. You know all the guys who got shot before the court, even up to this day.
Yeah.
You know, so this is like everything is happening over and over and over. When I was in Donald Lewis, my friend Gino Pratt, he got stabbed from... One of our next friend who lives in the Mason Edition, his name is Slime, Dion. His name is Dion McCartney, and he stabbed Gino with a Rambo knife and D.W. Davidson just like 27 years ago. Okay, and Gino was dead, and he stabbed him with a Rambo knife. So stabbing has been going on in our school for over 27 years in the school. This is nothing new. That's why I take this opportunity when I have this show to talk about these things and hope that the authorities and powers to be listen. You know, what is going on in our school today is that we might need police in the schools. And I'm going to let you comment on this, but I also think that why not use the cadets? We have the cadets who are trying to be police officers. Help them with the senior officer. We need at least four or five of those guys in the school together. We need to train them how to deal with conflict resolution in the school and how to disarm our youths. Because no matter how we put it, 20 years ago, they were starving. Now, we're about starving and killing at three government schools. I think one at GHS, one at Doris Johnson, and then one at CC Sweden. This one here makes the fourth one or something.
No, I know.
Yeah.
CC, Doris... Yeah,
right.
That's the third one, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So many of the kids have this mindset, and persons like yourself are so important because you know these kids, and then you can mentor all these kids. So what do you think that young man was thinking when he attacked the next young man? And first of all, let's just say this. These guys are not career criminals. You can't say they're repeated offenders. You can't say they're involved with crime. These are teenagers in government high school in 10, 11th grade, but they're thinking like a guy who was 30 and 40. So
my experience dealing with young men now, like, I just feel it's crime, badness, violence, that's the it thing for young men now. That is like, that's what's cool to them. Because, like I said, I deal with them, I see them all the time. The music that they listen to is filled with violence. The people they look up to are violent people. Violence is in style for young men right now. And in order to break that, you gotta combat that with some things, give them something to do. The young man that died, condolences to him and his family. My very close friend, he's assistant basketball coach at Government High. Mm-hmm. The young man plays for him.
Wow. So he was a good kid.
I don't know him personally, but I know he played basketball. I know he was just at practice Saturday. I was invigilating exam, and my phone kept dinging to the exam. And I was like, oh, I got to turn my phone off, because, you know. But it was dinging so rapidly, I was like, so something's wrong. So when I checked it, I saw it stopping coming out. So I called him. I said, what's up with this? And you could hear in his voice, he was distraught.
Yeah, distraught.
You know, and I was like, you know, he told me, he's like, yo, the young dude would play basketball. And I was like, what? Then, like I said, you know, all the young guys know each other. He played basketball. I looked on one of my players' profile.
You saw him?
You saw him. Even though he go to Government High, my player go to Seattle Walker. They got videos together, they friends. They,
yeah, because they, you know what I'm saying?
They play ball. And then it's outside the hit home. I'm like, wow, hey, I could easily be in my player. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's so connected. It's so small. And, you know, and he showed a message. Matter of fact, they had just talked that morning before he went to school. He screenshot the message they had. They was texting like 7 something. You know, they was talking. Then he said, anyway, I'm getting ready. I'm going to school. It was the last message he sent to my player. And I was just like, wow. Like, nobody knows what death is. Like, it's so sad. You know, he's so young. He got so much life ahead of him. And then to the young man that did the stabbing, like,
who wins in this?
Yeah, like, you know,
who wins in this?
It's a loss and a incarceration.
He's
a young man, not even 17 years old. Like, but we gotta really.
The tank, though, yeah, put a knife. And we were like that, too. So yeah, I'm not saying no, I'm no difference.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm sympathetic. To the young man fighting for his life when the young man died. You know what I'm saying? I'm even sympathetic to the young man that did this.
Who did it? Yeah, because
like you say, like at 17, man, we shouldn't be filled with that much anger, that much violence.
To stop him so much.
Yeah, like,
you know. Because you want to argue him or what?
You know, and like it goes back to what I tell you, like the imagery, what they looking at, like Scrooge, I can say, yeah, bro, growing up.
Yeah, you're right.
I saw you, what you was doing in the community.
Yeah.
I wanted to be like Calvin. I wanted to be like Seam. I wanted to talk like Pooey. The imagery was different.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What are these guys looking at their imagery right now? I had basketball stars. Yeah. C-May throwing passes. Pooey dunking, Boone,
yes,
360,
yeah.
Calvin.
Dog.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I saw you as a community leader.
Yeah, that's what
you
I changed around. I bring everyone around.
All the so-called big boy, big bad man,
everybody,
the daddy.
Yeah.
You know what
I'm
saying?
Yes.
The respect.
Yes.
You know
they've been in downtown, they've been in East Creek.
Everywhere. And everywhere. I saw you come on my side of town.
Yeah, I came on your side.
The bad man who was, you know, like I saw that.
Yeah, yeah.
So
that's how we got to stop gang warfare.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, you're right.
So it's the imagery, what we saw, like, but you know, I want to be like that. I want to have the respect everywhere I go. I also want to be like Boones and Pooey.
Yes,
to be the biggest. When
they
walk on the
park. There's big. Everyone know them.
When you walk in the park, all the little cools.
Who are you going to dunk on today?
You understand?
Boones, who are you going to fall today?
The imagery was different.
Yes, yes.
What are these guys looking at, you know, as their imagery now?
That was rap guys to listen to in the States, talking all kind of foolishness.
And right here, locally.
Locally.
What are they seeing?
Yes.
One thing I've noticed, like, all the so-called gang leaders and gang members or whatever, you know, when they die, pay attention to how much love they get from the young kids.
I don't want to,
you know what I'm saying? I don't want to.
No, you know,
but when certain people die, just sit back and go on Facebook and go on these things see how for weeks and months the love they get.
Yeah.
So imagine if, you understand what I'm saying? If they took all that energy
and put it in positivity.
You understand what I'm saying? Yes. That's why I say badness is in style. Because what they see is badness.
Yes.
What is glorified, what is being glorified, is badness. It's a shift from when I was growing up and you was growing up.
Yes.
It was a shift.
It's out of control in the schools.
It ain't nothing, bro. And like I say, in order to come by these young men's lives, we got to get them opportunities. We got to get them something to do. You know what I'm saying? We got to bring back the summer program. We got to bring back the urban renewals. We got to bring back these things to give them something so they can have more positivity. You understand what I'm saying? And that'll combat some of that stuff. Because when you're playing basketball and you're practicing and coach running you crazy and your lungs, your tongue hanging out your throat because you're tired, you ain't got no time to be picking up no knife and stabbing no one. You're trying to get to that water.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
The sad point about it is, this has been going on for years. And I always said it's not going to stop. I said this with Dr. C.W. Newry, a few weeks ago. And I said, unfortunately for us, we don't know who the next victim is going to be. You know, it could be any one child living in the country, and especially in these schools nowadays. Because the murder, the killing has been going around from school to school. And the same mentality is still in the school. Omar, I saw you calling me, Omar, but I couldn't answer you because I'm on air. I know you couldn't make it today, but my friend Mr. Baker did a wonderful job in your stead, and I hope sometime, Omar, you could come back and again be on the show sometime next week or week after next. Yeah, so, like I said, the guy who stabbed you, 25 years ago in Donald Davis, he's still around, He's the same young man again. See what I'm saying? It's not the same person, but the mindset of that person who stabbed Gino 25 years ago is still it's still there because it's the same thing.
Yeah.
So we have failed to understand that the same set of circumstances keep on happening over and over, and how are we going to correct those problems? First of all, if there was a problem between students, just how come we get transferred from D.W. Davis to C.R. Walker? Because the wife of Hubert Ingram, the former Prime Minister of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas.
She was my teacher. That was my principal.
And she was my teacher. She saw that guys tried to gang me, who was the rebelling raiders, and I was from Grandstand. She asked me first, and I told her my situation. And she said, yeah, those guys are really into the gang warfare. And she said, you were from Grandstand. So she got the understanding of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they live in Grandstand, they wanted to convert us to be rebelling raiders, but I rebelled.
Yeah.
So I went and I had a little stopping incident with a few of the guys. I went into the office that same day with Mr. Andrews and Mr. Roll, and they sit down. They told me they heard what Ms. Ingram come and watch on my behalf and told them what the problem was. So they counseled me. They sit me down. They say, Mr. Scucci, we can't have you with the Donald Lewis no more. I was in 11th grade. I think it was 1991. Hubert Ingram was the opposition leader.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to the school to talk about the defense force. He came to talk about dragging the Royal Bahamas police force and et cetera. That's what it is. And she invited him to the school to meet the opposition leader, right? So during that time, they sit me down in guidance council, and they explained to me. I had a knife in my bag. Mr. Mm-hmm. Rowe took my knife out of my bag, and he said, I know you have to defend yourself, but I can't let you keep this knife in your bag. So he took the knife from me. Didn't suspend me,
Mm-hmm.
Didn't suspend me. He said, I understand your situation, but for your safety and the student's safety, say, I'm going to have to transfer you to C.R. Walker. And that's how come I was the first graduating student in C.R. Walker in 1992.
Mm-hmm.
And there I met Sir Lyndon Oscar Pillen,
mm-hmm.
because he came to do the same thing that Hubert Ingram was doing at D.W. Davis, as to try and encourage us to be police officers, defense force officers, or custom officers, etc. Yeah. So when he took me off there, they understand my case, but they also gave me mentors.
Mm-hmm.
So when I left from there, I was turning over to Charles Markey. So Mr. Roll and Mr. Andrews and Ms. Ingram, when I left from D.W. Davis in 11th grade, the time I reached C.R. Walker, I already had Chuck Yeah. Maki there, yeah. And Mr. Barr, and then Mr. Ray Howard, Mr. Howard, Newbold, and they was all over me.
Yeah.
Every class, Mr. Newbold was there. Mr. Newbold beat me on assembly line with 2 or 3 times because he was monitoring me. And I can cause no problem in C.I. Walker the way I could cause problems in W. Davis.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, we need to say, look here, we need some cadet police in the school along with the senior police, probably 2 police officers. We need to train them on how they can. They don't need one. The senior officer could have a gun. The next officer could have a taser because we know these kids are very violent. If you look on numerous videos around high school, you would see where the police officer is standing present and 2 females, 2 young girls who are 14, 15. The police are telling them stop and they wouldn't separate when a senior officer, I mean inspector, you crazy? Back in our days, these bad boys, if we see that inspector and that inspector, they don't move. My brother, we ain't moving. We trying to get out there because we know how he's going to send the rest of them officers to break us right up.
Yeah.
These children nowadays don't have no respect for no police.
Yeah.
Look on the videos, GHS, wherever school, you always see the school girls and boys fighting with the police officer present. They won't stop. So you need to have the taser. Then you need to have those cadet corps, police officers who after training, because we need to train them to be able to deal with these circumstances, because we have to make they have to make sound judgment, because we have a lot of rogue police officers too, so we have to make sure set things from a perspective on how we're going to deal with this. So you have your taser, you have
I don't think parents gonna be in I don't think they're gonna be for their kids getting tasered.
Well, but before getting a knife. That's what they're going to be for?
You're right, but this is what I think. This is what I honestly think. You got to tighten it up. We need to find them. We need to find the parents.
Yes.
Every time, let them sit down.
Every time and monitor them.
Fight, every time a child fight, $500. Every time you find them, attack them finances. Something. Do something, bro. But
and this
you
got to
get responsibility.
Yes. Like, I know we completely out of time. I want to say this real quick. What we also need to do, if we know 2 students have a problem in the school, get their parents, right? Assign certain officers. We also need to bring back the truant officers, but we need to assign a team of persons, like counselors, just sit down these 2 young men who have a problem in the schools and let them beat it together. Help them. Give them necessary basic little stuff. Probably they don't have certain stuff for them. You could let them clean the school. Let them start to work together. Monitor them, you know, just get them the way to get up to solve the diffuse the problem. Don't just have them once come in the office and let them go again. No, let them wait together. You know, find what the problem is in the school. Find the 2 problem makers or who involved it in the school and get together and monitor them. Assist them with social service. Assist them.
Now they got you off. You know what? Some of the problem is 1. The school system is dominated by females.
Yes.
Administration, at most, it's about 6. Teachers not supposed to be. So all issues supposed to hand over to administration.
Yes.
Administration don't have time to deal with. You send this kid here.
Yes, that's why we need a board. We need a board that is dedicated. Including,
I'm speaking on for my administrative people. Like, they just don't have the time. They need enough time. Hmm. And they have so much things to do.
Like the government.
With, you know what I'm saying? Administrative stuff.
Yes, that.
Stuff they got to turn into district, emails, all these things, work they got to done. They have to be, that has to be done. Deadlines, they have to turn into.
Time and fashion.
They don't have the time to be stopping and dealing with.
So that's why the Prime Minister and the Minister of Education need to come up with preventative measures to deal with these issues. That is a small game. Just add some more money onto the budget and make sure you get a team of people who are consistent on dealing with conflict resolution, social service, you have the police, and et cetera. And the person who have the information about the family and how we could get the kids together, you know?
And right before we go, I'm going to leave it.
Go ahead.
I had this one kid in primary school. He was a terror.
Got to hurry up.
Well, he was a terror. And I say, how can I, because the teacher always called me and said, Mr. Baker, deal with him, right? Dealing with him, beating him, and they ain't do nothing. So I say, you know what? He always would come to me, Mr. Baker, can I be on this team? And I said, no.
Punish him
no.
Like that.
So One day, when I came out from school, it was the start of his grade 6 year, right? Before COVID happened. And I said, you know what? My mind is running. I said, you know what? I saw him. I said, come here. He didn't thought I would call him and beat him or something, right? So I said, no, I put my arms around him. I said, once you behave,
I'll let you be on the team.
I'm going to put you on every single team. He said, what, Mr. Baker? Eyes
open. That's a bare punishment instead of
you. You see what I'm saying? I say, if your teacher can come to your class every day, and if your teacher tell me you being rude, I ain't putting you on no team. He said, okay, Mr. Baker, I can do this.
Because I want no ball, did that tell me too.
And sure enough,
he improved.
Every time I go this, she say, boy, Mr. Baker, I don't know what you did to him, but he's
on his best behavior.
And I put him on every single team, and you just enjoyed it.
Yes, so and that's how you do it. I do things in the tournament for many years, and that is one of the reasons.
You have to find a way to reach these kids. Yes. Beating, yelling, screaming.
Yes.
The hardest work.
I just want to say this, you know. We're going to continue to have loss of life in our high schools in the country. I don't know who's going to be the next victim. I just pray to God that he guide and protect us and that we have no victims. But that's going to be impossible to ask because we are not learning to correct our problem. And for many of us, we're going to be crying for our loved ones. You know, it's so sad to see on the news how many, that lady crying for her son, then the lady crying for her son. You know, man, is so much pain, you know. So I want to thank my coach, Dustin Baker, who was doing great things by C.R. Walker. You're still coached by C.R. Walker?
Yes, sir.
And he is doing a tremendous job by C.R. Walker. I hope to see you continue to be an inspiration and guide Matek, all the young men that come to your hands. I hope the authorities to be that are listening. I hope that the head principal at C.R. Walker is listening to the success of this young coach in studios. And to all who listen to Inside the Industry, I want you to have a wonderful Friday evening. And we'll see you next week on Guiding Radio 96.9 FM. Hope you enjoy the show.
Now that you're gone, you know the sun don't shine from the city.